Remember when hand claps were like, they were like, we don't need a snare drum anymore. Hand claps.
Dark days.
Dark nights.
Jen loves hand claps in a song. In fact, I remember on like her like MySpace or whatever, she had it as like a profile aww thing where she was like, if a song has hand claps, I'm in.
And that's when you were like, because I'm assuming you found her via MySpace. You found your wife.
Of course.
You're like, I'm in love. I'm in love with the claps.
Through the glorified dating site that was MySpace, yes.
There have been people that fell in love via MySpace, right?
Oh yeah.
And are like still together.
People have fallen in love in all kinds of places.
I hope there are those kinds of people, because I feel like that's an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think of how much different tech those people have seen together, like through
right
the ages. But I think I want to see a really fucked up couple that's still together that got together through Zanga.
Oh man.
Oh man. Well, that would be an interesting one, because you're just meeting via you're falling in love via text, right? Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like love at first sight or whatever that reality show is. You're just reading their journal entries and you're like, who is this person behind this great mind?
Text, and you could upload one MP3. You couldn't upload it. You could link to an MP3 that was on another site and play it on your Zanga.
That's right. You could have you could have background music. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And so I linked Straylight Run.
Nice.
Which is I don't know how to explain Straylight Run without explaining all of all of the emo scene.
Yeah, I know Straylight Run. I'm trying to think what mine. I probably did so many different ones. I probably rotated constantly.
Yeah, mine was. I was a LiveJournal kid, not Zanga. We didn't have the ability to link to music, but there was that field of put in what you're listening to right now, and it was it was a lot of Fall Out Boy, a lot of Fall Out Boy.
But you also had to be like, go out and buy the CD.
Yeah, go out and listen to this. If you want to get to know me better, go out and get the CD. Play it right now while you're reading this blog post about why I'm sad that I'm always alone and no girl likes me, and then fall in love with me.
If you love homework, you're gonna love me.
I am looking forward to the time where like our politicians and big political leaders, that's the same thing, are like, there's not the expose, but just they're now old and young enough that like their live journals and stuff come up. Not that they should be held against them, but I think it'd just be interesting, right? There's like videos of AOC like making fun videos with her friends in college kind of thing, right? Like nothing embarrassing, just like, oh yeah, she's like dancing.
Uh-huh.
Here, she's having fun.
She's a human being.
Yeah, she's just a person. Yeah, there's that. I think the youngest guy in the Congress or Senate now, like I saw TikToks of him like on stage with Paramore. He's just having a good time. Like, let's get to that more. Let's get to, I don't know.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't think we can predict how culture is going to shift, especially like how the political atmosphere is going to change once all the boomers die off, because they kind of control everything right now just by
iron grip, via iron grip.
Yeah, they won't get the fuck out. Get out of here.
they got numbers. Although I think there are more millennials than boomers right now. But
is it true?
Yeah, because the boomers are starting to fall off the
just a whole generation of Feinsteins. Just get the fuck out of here.
I don't even know what that means.
You don't, Dianne Feinstein, just like go to sleep. Like, just you don't have to die. Just go to sleep. Like, get out of here. Get out of Congress.
Telling the children no. That's all I know about her. Was she's just dumb.
That's right. The children talk. That was a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
Wait, actually, I don't even know the children talk
she
you're referring to.
Was talking like a bunch of students visited about the environment, like, you know, like climate change and stuff like that. And they basically were like, we'd really like it if you could, you know, like fix the world that we're going to be growing up into. And she's like, well, children, that's just not realistic. And you're going to have to suck a dick.
Yeah, it was pretty much. I mean, Paul is sugarcoating it a little bit. She was much meaner than that. But yeah, you captured the tone.
The essence, yeah.
I just don't get this mindset of like old people who want to hold on to power and stuff, like retire, like go hang out at Old People Island.
Well,
and have a good
here's
time.
the problem there is an entire generation, in fact all human history before us probably was constituted of people who did not understand the idea of having fun or enjoying life. We are a generation that's like, if I were not to work, I would have an infinite list of joys to go to. And then you have these people are like, work is what meaning is. I must work constantly until die.
I was thinking about homesteaders the other day, because, you know, you can't look at a micro video platform and not get bombarded with van lifers or homesteaders or whatever.
Boondogglers. Sure.
Boondogglers.
This, I don't know if that's the word. There's a boon something.
I thought a boondoggler was like a snake oil salesman.
Let me see.
What? Okay, hold on. Yeah.
Nah, boondoggle is the little bracelets. Never mind. I was wrong about that. But
I thought a boondoggle was like a gaffe, like a thing that's been fucked up. Like that was a total boondoggle. But okay, so I was getting served homesteader stuff.
Yes.
I'm sure there are plenty of people who just like move to a extremely rural part of the country and, you know, mm-hmm. make everything themselves and like keep animals and stuff like that and just mm-hmm. kind of live off the grid mm-hmm. and they don't have a TikTok about it or whatever. And they're not.
Can you imagine?
Like, yeah. They're not trying to get up in your face about it. And I'm like, I guess, but like thinking about that, it's like sold to you as like a more like natural way to live your life. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in fact, it is impossible without the internet because these people need to learn how to do so many things mm-hmm. and they need to be able to research that kind of thing really quickly. And like, you cannot have like this homesteader boom without the internet because they just need to know how to do all this like stuff. Like, my chicken's sick. What do I do?
They need to be engaged by the internet, right?
Yeah. The internet makes it possible. And thinking about, you know, people my parents' age, whenever they're confronted with a problem, sometimes they'll just not know what to do. And I'm like, you could just Google it. You could just...
and they prefer to use my favorite term, let's never know and give up.
Let's never know and give up. Not all boomers, obviously.
Of course.
Like, there are obviously folks who are compassionate and curious and aren't total pieces of crap.
Absolutely.
What I'm more trying to talk about is generationally, we might have an advantage that we don't really see, which is we can pivot.
Sure. We've been forced to pivot. Yeah.
We have been forced to pivot. And I think, back to my point, you know, like I was being glib about it, but like, I do believe that the generation before us, the boomers, or I guess Gen X, but more so boomers, they definitely grew up in a time where it was like, you work and that is your identity. And your idea is to pass on to your children the gains you make, and which is a noble goal. But the problem was that they did that and they gave us that somewhat, and now they're like, "Why are you all so soft? Why don't you want to work?" And it's like, "Cause that's not the point. The whole point was to make it so that we could do whatever the fuck we wanted. Isn't that the idea?"
Yeah,
it's a dance. You're supposed to enjoy it. You're supposed to have fun.
Yeah, and like, yeah, you can work still, but like, can you do work that, like, doesn't control other people's lives? Can't you go off to the side and write a book for the rest of your life? Like, isn't that a thing you could just do?
Sure.
Or grow some plants?
Go make a whole side company of underwater submersibles, you know?
Well, do we start it now?
Let's go. Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Welcome to Goosebuds. I'm fine with that.
Hi,
welcome to
Goosebuds. I'm pissed off at rich people today. Let's fucking go. Let's go.
Today,
welcome
Jack.
To Goosebuds. Oh, yeah, especially today. Yesterday, you know what? Billionaires, they were all right.
I was feeling soft towards them yesterday.
Today, you die by the sword. What's up? Welcome to Goosebuds.
Welcome to Goosebuds. I'm Kevin.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Chad.
And today, we read Earth Geeks Must Go by R.L. Stine, a book for young adults.
With a plot and maybe characters.
Part of the Goosebumps 2000 series, this exciting tale was written by a human man who knows about the world of children.
Second to last episode of Goosebumps 2000. We're almost done, guys.
We're almost done. This one had promise, I feel. Earth Geeks Must Go. Great title.
You like the title. Did you like the tagline, which was warning colon alien on board?
Didn't really understand that.
Not sure what that was going for.
No, yeah, it doesn't actually apply to the story, does it?
No.
Thought it might be a baby on board.
Maybe.
Thing. Yeah, but
kind of just felt like words intended to evoke maybe a meaning. Bordering on poetry. He was going for a little poetry on the cover this time.
We were talking about this before we were recording, and none of us have amazing, like, we all felt boondoggled by this one.
Good use of boondoggle there, Kevin. Was the title supposed to be Earth Geeks Must Die?
I think it probably was.
Does that feel like the natural title?
I think it was. And then the book chaperone said no.
No, can't say you can't say death on this scary
Although,
book.
This book, it's got some dark stuff in it, especially at the end of this book.
I kind of liked the like overhanging like confusion and like the like how he's kind of focusing in on this feeling of being different and not knowing how to participate in society.
So this book is Cube, the movie Cube. It's
is that the one with the traps?
That's the one where the people wake up inside of a cube. And they don't know why they're there. They don't have any memories of what was happening before them being there. They don't have any ideas of what's going on. It's one of those situations. It's a wake up in the midst of a mystery. But also, Kevin, I think you're right, because I think plot-wise it's that. But then on a subtext level, it definitely is tapping into puberty, I think.
Yeah, he actually does a lot with geeks as just sort of like a central motif to build around, like both in the sense of being an outcast or not being like, you know, not having any like values that people enjoy, like, you know, our main kid like can't read the words, and he doesn't know the numbers, like he's just he doesn't know anything about the culture he's in. And it's like yeah, that would be really disconcerting. I didn't realize how much kids especially kind of need that reinforcement of I am part of a society.
That's really smart of y'all to say that. I was assuming it was more of a I mean, geek's a good term for it. It's in the title. But like almost someone that is like about to be left behind in the education system or something. You know, there's something about all this. Like, is this a metaphor for like having dyslexia or something? You know what I mean? It just is kind of
It's
no one in school is helping you and the right teacher for you.
It definitely felt like it was dealing with some sort of feeling of alienation. Like literally they're aliens, but in the subtext, it felt like it was, you know, it's just like an allegory for being a teenager and switching off into that period of life where you're like, wow, I'm a hormonal creature and I don't understand anything that's happening to me.
A hairier part of my body and everything I'm doing.
Exactly. Yeah, especially my armpits.
Oh, man.
It's sort of a Star Trek-y vibe where he can like talk about a thing without directly bringing up the thing. Like it could kind of be about dyslexia if you look at it that way.
Sure.
It could be about ADHD if you look at it another way.
Like, should we talk about the general plot a little bit, just the premise for those who haven't read the book?
We should, but I do want to preface this conversation with, well, we can talk about it at the end, but I don't think he ever pays off any of the things that he sets up in this book.
There's one payoff, but then he spoils the payoff.
Yes. Right.
I think as you said, Kevin, like a series of events happened.
It's all plot, no character growth.
Yeah, but we'll make it fun for the listener.
You know?
You guys don't have to suffer like we suffered. This book kicks off with like the most like cis male hetero Tinder profile ever.
He's aware of it. He's 100% aware of how normal and average he is.
I'm just a normal guy.
I love The Office and I love sports. And I'm trying to remember all the other ones.
Posing with the fish.
Normal guy. Hey, vanilla's okay. Vanilla's good. Yeah. Sometimes you want the classic flavor of vanilla.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what we get out of Jacob, whose name I don't think we know until like a quarter or a third of the way into the book.
Yeah. I think they do call him Jacob. The teacher, I think, knows his name, right?
But he never outright says, I'm Jacob, which is kind of, or Jacob, that's my name. Like, he never does the classic
Goosebumps
thing.
I think this is, I didn't realize this until Goosebumps Wiki pointed out. This is the only Goosebumps book to be written in the present tense.
Oh.
Outside of the Give Yourself Goosebumps series.
Yeah, apparently. You know what's funny is this was first person present tense, and I instantly felt a friction. Because I'm so used to it being past tense.
That is super interesting. I didn't pick up on that at all. And I felt like maybe that tense structure like kind of disassociated me a little bit.
Yeah. Which is probably, I mean, every time the tense changes, I assume that means a good sign of a ghostwriter. Just guessing that an editorial wise, they wouldn't be like, you got to rewrite this entire book because RL writes in third person past.
Right.
Like, it'll just be like, yeah, this works. Just put in like falls on their knees and let out a low groan. Like, put that in.
Yeah, right. I, okay. This book made me, I read this book in two sittings. I read three quarters of it yesterday and the rest of it this morning.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, I was walking around yesterday, tippling a couple drinks, and I was, it made me ruminate on this whole process of Goosebumps reading that we've been doing for years.
Is this where you tell us you quit the podcast?
And I realized I'm wasting my life and I must go. I was thinking about how my brain is primed by years and stacks of books that I have read by R.L. Stine. And mm-hmm. how this book, like I said, opens with like a kind of cube, like a mysterious, like, what the hell is going on? Or maybe even like, to use the cheesy term, Kafka-esque, maybe a little Nabokov, Invitation to a Beheading, you know, a moment of waking up in a...
Damn, this is a smart podcast.
Sure is. You know, like waking up into like a scary situation where you're completely confused, you know, talking heads ish. How did I get here moment? Right.
Yeah.
And which is relatable, and cool and a cool setting. I don't think he's done that ever before, where it's like he's just dropped you in media res to the mystery and the horrors are occurring right away. Usually there's a slow build, right? It's the kid's boring life.
Yeah.
We get a little bit of backstory, and then the horrors appear in their life.
Here are the clothes I like to wear.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But this doesn't do that. But my brain is primed to instantly pick up on the Steinisms, of which the first couple chapters are atrocious in this book, of line after line of question and question and question, which feel like they're not there to actually be any sort of advancement of the story or character, but merely a thing to build out and pad out the chapter. And this one is loaded with that stuff, which you would be questioning these things in this situation if you woke up in a hypercube filled with death traps. You would be like,
well,
why
isn't
am I
here? That convenient for R.L. Stine?
Isn't that convenient? Right. And so like I'm instantly brought into that mindset. And I think this book is actually kind of fun and interesting. In the start, I think it's one of the better books in terms of like getting right to the meat, getting right to things happening, like you said, Kevin.
Yeah, we're even given a little like a nugget to hang on. He says at the end of chapter one, "I didn't know my life would depend on crazy old Phil."
Crazy old Phil.
Crazy old Phil.
I'm like, who's that going to be? That's exciting. Can't wait to meet crazy old Phil.
I'm sure crazy old Phil will not just fill up a single chapter of this book and really just be
and not really be important.
A stepping stone to the twist ending of the book.
Yeah, that'll bring it in line with what the cover depicts.
Uh-huh.
Can I also add that from my, you made the smarter reference of Cube, Paul, a movie that I have not seen, but I've seen most of it via clips on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
You guys aware that like half of TikTok is just movie piracy? It's a really great way to watch movies and think you've seen them.
Wow.
In 2 minute clips. Anyway, so I've seen a lot of Cube. Looks like a cool film. But this reminded me actually more was a lesser known Cartoon Network show called Tower Prep. Created by Paul Dini, Batman writer.
Yeah, I don't know that. Tower what?
Yeah, it was Tower Prep. It was during, I only remember because it was the summer intern there, and it was during their live action year.
Oh, yeah.
A mysterious dramatic show about kids who wake up in a, kind of similar to this, and maybe go like, oh shit, Tower Prep. Wakes up in a school and you can't escape, and if you run out into the woods, there's like little gremlin things that take you back, and why are these kids here? More interesting mystery box probably than what goes on in Earth Geeks Must Go.
But sure,
if anyone's out there who knows Tower Prep, hit me up.
You said this was Cartoon Network.
This was the summer where Cartoon Network goes, we're CN real, and they did a bunch of reality shows and a couple scripted shows, and everyone really hated it.
They're out in the woods in this one like screenshot I'm looking at, and it looks exactly like a shot from Bigfoot's Big Feet.
Oh, hell yeah. It does. I'm looking at it right now.
You mean the infamous episode of Spooky Squad?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The show that was definitely not influenced by Goosebumps at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Anyway, if anyone remembers that is, there's similar opening scenes, but that one was everyone in the school has been kidnapped and put here and doesn't remember why
right,
they're here.
Right, 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 right.
And this is just one, well, a couple kids don't remember why they're here.
That was sort of part of like the rising tide of like Hunger Games esque,
yeah,
like,
Maze Runner, yep, uh-huh.
Yeah,
Battle Royale. influence type stuff that I think is dropping off, but
it'll come back around. Kids killing kids is always fun.
it's a crowd pleaser for sure. Jacob is placed into his 12th grade classroom. There are lots of words. RL has fun with it. I think this is RL because he's doing, there's a lot of shit in here that he just likes to do.
Okay, here's the thing. There's a lot of world building without any thought behind the world building, I feel.
And he loves that.
Yeah. There's no actual world building happening. It's just make up a word and impose the world building entirely on your audience, and not in the good way. Not like in like the fill in the gaps way, like entirely like, you figure this shit out.
But there's something to be learned there, right? I think there is actually like something good in that you can kind of get what the thing is from context clues. It's not the kind of like Final Fantasy 13 world building where you need a wiki open to know what anyone's fucking talking
right.
about.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
So like, I don't know. He'll say a word and I like kind of get what he's driving at. Even if the main character's like, Trelf, what could that be? I'm like, well, it seems like a number.
right.
It seems like 12 with two letters changed.
It's certainly easy there. I think where I really noticed it was, especially in the sport that occurs later in this, which very much so felt like a, like, I don't actually want to think about what the kids are doing. Like, there's no, in my mind, there was no picture in his brain of what the children were doing. He was just writing lines. Maybe he was loosely thinking of it, but he did no work to paint any actions that the kids were doing. He was just having them say what they were doing out loud in an alien, with alien terms. And there is no attempt to be like, he was flipping in the air, you know, like make a fucking Starship Troopers future football for me or something, you know, like give me something to grip onto.
It didn't seem like this is actually much of a sci-fi different school. It's just what if letters were different?
I actually really liked the sports scenes.
Okay.
Because they really hit on a very specific anxiety I have, which is I'm fine learning a game, but learning a sport is always frustrating to me.
Okay.
Because it's never something I can wrap like all of my head around rules wise. Like,
but you're a game maker, man. I know. Aren't you ever just,
That's why it frustrates me, Chad. that's the core of it.
You just always want to be entire. You need to know every mechanic right away.
I do. And I feel like in a sport, you're letting so many people down when you don't understand the rules of it. Mm-hmm. Like, it just seems like such a fucking bummer for everyone around you. Whereas in a game, like a tabletop game or something, even though I don't love board games or whatever, it's usually like, oh, no, you can't do that. So, like, let's go back a step.
Mm-hmm.
In sports, it's like, oh, I've ruined everyone's, you know, fun communal activity.
Right. The beauty of the majestic actions we are going to take together and the flow we will enter as a group unit is spoiled by the person
the
who doesn't know.
Flow. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I think that's part of my concern with team stuff.
Like, yeah.
Letting the team down is such like a viscerally bad feeling.
Right. And that's why I don't. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of multiplayer games for that reason, because I don't like to mess the team up. If it's a it's a co-op thing, that's fine, because we'll learn together. But it's when everybody's joy, you know, is hinged upon winning and I fuck that up, it does not feel good.
Yeah. So that worked for me as far as this book goes. There are bright spots to this thing.
We'll get and we'll get into the sport more. And there are, I don't know. We'll talk about that.
So like there's the scene where Mr. Cray writes stuff on the board and Jacob can't read it. And I'm like, oh, it's a dream. Because in dreams, you know, you can't.
Right.
You can't read, I guess. And then but then I remember the title's Earth Geeks Must Go, and I was like, it's clearly not a dream.
I was really nervous that it was going to be a dream, Kevin. For the first couple of chapters of this, I was waiting for the moment where he wakes up, or I was waiting for the mystery box to be opened, like you said, Chad. Like, I was waiting for that, because RL does love to do that. He'll do like 3 or 4 chapters sometimes, and then and then reveal that it was a mystery box, and then give you put you back into the mundane of reality. But he never does that, and I think that worked for me in this book. And I do think this book goes to some fun places in terms of like goofy, sci-fi, like tropey stuff. But like you also said, Kevin, there is a series of actions that occur, but there are not any sort of, like, I don't think Jacob grows as a person or learns from his experience in any way.
Well, Jacob doesn't have traits. He spends a whole chapter talking about how he doesn't have any defining traits.
Right.
It doesn't help if you don't know who you are, I guess. Like, yeah. I guess when you're just a blank slate like that.
Okay. You know what? I will argue something. Jacob is a normal guy, but now he lives in the least normal place ever for him. His normalcy is completely alien at this point. So in a sense, he is a normal guy and he would be a boring run-of-the-mill character, but in this world he's a total freak because of how normal he is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Paul, you're right. This book is amazing.
It's great. It's a great good book.
This whole time I feel like you guys have kind of been like, this is a pretty good book.
it's hard for me to fall one way or the other on this because it's there are like really good bright spots that I think interact with real fear, which is something that I think has been missing from the last couple Goosebumps 2000 entries.
Mm-hmm.
Even Full Moon Fever, which was fucking dope as hell,
right,
wasn't really scary.
No.
And this kind of has a creeping terror and confusion to it.
Sure. I don't think this one ever really truly got scary for me, but yeah. I know what you're saying. There is something scary about being completely helpless. And like he goes through all the steps of trying to figure out what's going on, and which we'll get to those too, because there's some funny moments where I'm like, do you really think that this is going to work? Do you really think?
Why don't we get to Armpit Sandwich?
Okay, let's get to Armpit Sandwich.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to lunch and he's like, thank God we're not in the classroom anymore. I can clear my head. Maybe I'm just hungry.
Mm-hmm.
I like how he's like still trying to justify this stuff to him. And I'm like, man, that is like real like kid stuff, being like, clearly I'm the one at fault here. Like, it's not the environment. And he goes and he sits down and he goes to put his sandwich into his mouth to eat it. And a girl goes, ew, you're putting the sandwich near your mouth. He's like, what? He looks around and everybody's eating their lunch with their armpits. There's a kid who's straight up like shoving a plastic yogurt thing
into the pit. And at first, I'm instantly like, not funny or cool. This is lol random. You know, like I'm not into it. But then we carry on into the scene a little bit more. And when he's examining the other people's armpit mouths, you do see that there is a ring of teeth around the armpit mouth.
It's terrifying.
At which point, a
lamprey-like mouth.
A lamprey-like mouth. It was horrific, and at that point I was like, all right, you've saved this. There is some good world building right in that moment.
Yeah, I like the chunky kid eating with both pits at the same time.
Yep. And it's funny because they call him a piggy, which I guess implies that pigs also eat with their armpits in this world.
Yeah,
huh.
Like...
Huh.
And
huh.
Pigs exist in this universe, pigs, which is also interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions that are raised by this where it's like, okay, things are slightly off here, but it is really close to our world. So it's like, but they, well, where were these divergences? Where did these appear from?
So like at this point, I'm pretty like, all right, let's see what you got.
Yeah, sure.
I am intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Jacob freaks out and he runs out to the woods. Where he thinks he's being followed, so he runs even deeper into the woods. And, like, the idea that you could just leave school is, like, wild to me, because I never thought that was the thing.
Yeah, I could do that a couple times in high school.
In high school, I could, but in 12th grade, I was never able to leave.
Yeah, when I was a 12th grader, it was crazy. he has a creature encounter with a bunch of faceless, legless, quarter-sized round bugs that begin biting him and draining him of his blood. They're hairy and legless and squishy and gross.
Yeah.
And he has a freak out and he runs away after he pulls them off of him, and he bumps into a girl he saw at lunch who stuck out to him,
who was staring at him. Yeah.
And he's like, did you follow me here? And she's like, you're different. He's like, what?
I know, because I'm different too, she says. And this book was a lot of a character following... It is like Daisy chains multiple characters following Jacob around and him being freaked out by them, only to find out that they're actually a helper for him.
Yeah.
Or in the similar situation, because he encounters Arlene after the sucker bugs, which are gross and nasty, and it's a good... It's a good moment. I think was she involved? No, she wasn't involved in the first sucker bug incident, right? Like he gets the sucker bug.
he gets sucker bugs and he screams because they're really gross.
Right.
And that's how Arlene finds him.
That's right. That's right.
By the way, can I just add, I forgot to mention this when we were talking about the armpits, that RL had teased that this title at one point was Escape from the Armpit Planet.
Uh-huh. Oh, I kind of like that better, honestly. But that it would spoil. It kind of spoils that scene if you know that something weird's
going on. But like, also, you're like, is that the main thing y'all have going on? Is just armpits? Is that what you're...
Besides the language, I don't really know that there's much different stuff going on here.
He's kind of in like a 1950s, like, aliens as like code for communists kind of thing.
Right,
like,
right.
He's kind of in that
sure,
mindset.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, you can't tell a communist by looking at him. Except RL, I don't think, has any of these... thought is like, ah, they just had weird aliens, there's no meaning or symbolism or anything. So yeah, I think he's just interested in the aesthetics of this sort of body snatchers
sure
thing happening here. So we meet Arlene, and Arlene doesn't know her last name or where she's from. Jacob realizes that he doesn't know a lot of things,
right?
Like, he can't access parts of his memories, but he thinks he has a house. He thinks he lives in a house.
He thinks he lives in a house, and he can feel his way toward it.
Yeah.
I understand that. He's got, like, a...
Yeah.
I don't know. He's got, like, I didn't even have an explanation for it. He's got, like, a little primal tracking goal.
Yeah, he's got truths of the heart if he does not have truths of the mind.
Damn, Kevin.
Now, I can't remember. Do they go to the house next, and then they have another bug drop?
Here's what happens is they're talking. Arlene proves that she's normal by showing her armpits in the woods. Mm-hmm. And then...
metaphor for sexual discovery.
good job, Chad. You did it. Figured it out.
Sorry.
It's all right. Then a bunch of bugs fall on them. And a bunch of kids show up, and they whistle at the bugs to get them to stop biting the kids. And they're like... They whistle really loud and sharply.
And the bugs, I think, freeze up and fall off of them. And then they start calling them splatters.
And then they have a full-on, like, water balloon fight, whipping bugs at each other.
They're smashing them between their hands. Yellow pus is exploding out of them and flying everywhere. And there have been, like, essentially the gasoline fight from the beginning of Zoolander with the... with their splatter bugs, and they're having a great time. And just before this, these things were sucking on our main characters, so we can only assume that part of their essence has been sucked into these things and is being splattered back upon them. It's nasty. And I also want to say something I noticed multiple times in this book. When the splatter bugs do assault somebody and start to stick to them, they consistently fall onto people's tongues. During the scene where Jacob and Arlene have them fall,
a lot of bugs in the mouth.
Arlene gets one directly on the tongue, and then and then later it is described that they are grunting and sucking as they are on them. And it's fucking nasty. It is absolutely foul.
These are gross little dudes.
These are gross little dudes, and the turn for them later is quite interesting.
Yeah. So the splatter fight happens, and...
Well, he even uses the words, this starts a splatter war.
This is how you lose the splatter war.
One of the girls from lunch, Myrna, is like, hey, you guys aren't allowed to be in the woods. To which they don't counter, well, you're in the woods.
Right, right.
So you're also not allowed to be in the place you are. So I guess we're all in trouble.
Mm-hmm. But instead they go, no, 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 we shall narc upon you, and then we will be forgiven of our woods crimes.
Children, take note. If you're a narc, you can do whatever you want.
You can do any crime. As long as you can find somebody to put to patsy the crime onto, you're good.
Yeah.
Cop RL showing up again. The children are like, we should talk to an honored elder, and they take the cast of kooky kids to the principal's office, and his name is Mr. Traeger, and I just kind of imagined Ted Danson because they said he had silver hair.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, right. A little good place.
Good casting.
Yeah.
And there's a classic authority figure makes a badly timed joke where he's like, you've done a fatal crime. And he's like, nah, just kidding. I'm just fucking with you. And then
relax, kid, relax, have fun, ease up.
And then he's like, well, don't cause any more trouble, and Jacob, don't do the eating with your mouth thing again, that's just disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, So they leave the principal's office and...
But he's just, like, dismissing, like, that was a weird thing you did. Move on.
Yeah.
Not like we should contact a scientist.
I think maybe it's probably, like, a classic, like, class clown kind of thing. Where they're from. A classic joke, but not appropriate for schools. You have to reprimand it.
Right.
Like all comedy should be illegal.
You know, I don't disagree, Kevin.
So they are sent back, and I believe that they still have a splatter on their hands.
Yeah, so this is a scene that actually ends up mattering, which I found very surprising.
It truly does. and it sets up, it establishes a character trait that will be thrown to the side and ultimately will be useless at the end of the book.
It's almost like he saw us, making notes in the future that, like, none of his character traits ever, like, pay off or, like, mm-hmm, one of the mm-hmm. little... Never, like, sets up treats for us. And he does set up a treat for us. He does one foreshadowing, which does make this literature.
Thanks, RL. Thanks for that treat.
Thank you, RL.
Arlene refuses to involve herself in the splatter war, and she says, I will not kill a living creature. They're a living creature. And she's very sweet about it, and she keeps it alive. And they decide that they're going to do some exploration and try and figure out what's going on. So they're going to escape school again. So it's actually great. They have the splatter, and it's kind of their excuse to go outside and leave school. And Jacob sees a playground off of the school campus. So he takes the bug that drops on you and sucks on you and throws it into the children's play area.
Yeah.
That'll teach him.
And then he spots a creepy man in a dirty raincoat. Who's yelling at him to come to him. He's summoning him.
And I was like, oh, cool. It's crazy old Phil. That's amazing. Like, yeah, hey, crazy old Phil.
Where he's here.
Super definitely crazy old Phil. Mm-hmm. No doubt in my mind that is crazy old Phil.
Yep. It's not crazy old Phil. We'll find
it's
out
not.
Soon.
We'll find out it's not. Something much weirder.
Yeah. So I think they go to the library here, right?
Yeah. Okay. So they suffer through the rest of the day at the school where we learn about Plogia and the writer Thomas Maroon.
Oh,
and,
that's right. Right.
There are 14 hours in a on the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pass by some kids playing Scrog Ball or whatever, and they get a double meaner but dispute it because the Scrag wasn't on the krill or whatever.
Yeah. You scratch. Someone scratches. Yeah, there's some good terms, but again, don't think he ever really attempts to make this into a real sport in his head. Like, it would be nice if he at least came up with the basic premise so that these words were referring to something that you could maybe get some. I get it's supposed to feel alien. I understand that.
So future Goosebump fans at the Goosebump conventions that happen every year
should be able to play the game. This yes, game. They need
yeah,
to be able
yeah,
to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen what RL does to literature. I don't want to see what he does to game design.
What he does to sport and game. Okay, fair.
It would be Calvin Ball as shit, I imagine, if he planning games out the way he writes.
It certainly has some Calvin Ball energy already, for sure.
Then they sit down and try to remember really hard for a while. They just sit on the sidewalk and try super hard to remember things.
Right.
Then they go to a library, and eagle-eared listeners may recall that they don't know how to read in this universe.
It's so infuriating because you should never be ahead of your character. Your reader should never be ahead of your characters. But, like, everything we have been shown for the first 10 chapters of this book has shown us that this is an alien world without an English language. So why they think the library will be a different place, I do not know. There is zero logic in this choice, but we go along with them regardless.
Their brains hurt.
Their brains do hurt, so maybe they'll go to the place that helps with brain hurt, which is the library, I guess.
They run full tilt out of the library for no reason. Mm-hmm. They also see people reading the books with their tongues by licking the bumps on the pages.
Which is kind of a fun little change, because it's like, oh, well, they don't use their mouths for eating, so they have to use them for something, and they use it for reading. But soggy books, guys. You're going to have some really soggy books.
Yeah, exactly. Unless we're talking about this is special, like, metal paper.
Yeah.
Like in that Mystery Science Theater series, Start Planet Ship Earth or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With metal paper. Otherwise, these books are not going to survive more than a couple reads. Also, ugh.
I can see a situation where, like, there's just, like, a pile of dental dams, in the library.
Uh-huh,
and it's
put
one of these on, and then you can read and hygienically.
But still somehow no sex education in the school.
No, but, you know.
Dental dams, yeah.
And then, they run out. The crazy guy with the raincoat is chasing them again.
Yep.
They run to what what Jacob thinks is home.
Right.
And it's like a weird, like, empty.
It's just a house with no pictures.
Generic house.
Yeah, there's no pictures or any sort of like clues as to like who lives here. It's like a very like it's a serial killer's home.
But there is a TV on to do some world building and exposition.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
And we get there's like a great RoboCop moment here where there's a game show called Guess the Flavor, where tubes of flavored liquid are poured into the armpits of the contestants, and we learn that they do have cherry. And other flavors similar to Earth. Again, everything is pretty similar to Earth, except the whole armpit thing and splatters.
That's a very RL thing, is game shows.
Yeah.
He likes that. Has he done a game show, Goosebumps, that we've read?
We've done Give Yourself Goosebumps had one, right?
I think
Am
so.
Am I just imagining that?
Yeah, I think there was a death game show.
And Horrorland ties in the idea of reality shows or whatever.
Reality shows, yeah. And they have game show type games, you know, like carnival games, which...
Monster TV.
Yeah, what do you think RL's favorite game show is? If you had to guess,
Price is Right.
Yeah, that'd be my guess as well. And it's
RL is a
work from home. He's been working from home way before it was cool. he had the ability to take a midday nap and watch Price is Right. So he's a Price is Righter for sure.
I think you're right. My second guess would be Let's Make a Deal. I think he probably likes the wild terror of what's behind that door.
Okay. He likes the mystery of what's behind the door.
That's about the scariest he can handle.
Oh, it's a Ski-Doo. Oh, no.
It's a goat.
You're going to goat it. Let's make a deal.
Yeah, you know, just a whole
game. We gave you an animal to take care of? Sorry. All right.
Have a tremendous burden. So, Guess the Flavor, and then there's, like, a cartoon where two mice are chasing a dog, and I'm like, what's that about?
I want to watch more of that cartoon.
Is that showing how different things are in this universe, or is that a reflection, are cartoons normal here? Because that seems like a weird cartoony kind of thing.
Right.
I don't know what's happening with that.
Don't know, but we quickly switch to news channel, where it is revealed that some Earth geeks have arrived, and they are here to murder everybody, and they must be stopped.
And the title is said, Earth geeks must go. Earth geeks must go.
Must go. And this makes Jacob and Arlene realize that they must be the Earth geeks themselves.
Yep. Jacob bumps his head, looking around the house for clues, and he remembers he's from Wisconsin.
Yeah, he too excitedly runs towards what he thinks is his, like, I think his shelf in his room, slips, bumps his head, and goes, oh shit, I'm from Wisconsin. And that has zero bearing on the rest of the story, other than he knows he's from Wisconsin.
I'm a fucking cheddarhead. At this point in the story, reading through it, I had assumed everyone kind of knew that Jacob was like not a, you know, a human, and there's some sort of like they live sort of thing, or like Invasion of the Body Snatchers where we know you're a human,
no.
But like we're just trying to keep your head down, and it wasn't until the news report like, oh no, no one realizes. They just think that like
they're just really oblivious to the very obvious differences between that. You know, maybe it's good, you know, maybe this is a positive for this alien culture. They're not too judgmental.
I guess that's true. They're like, what a cool alien now that doesn't eat from his armpits or does weird, wacky stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty judgmental.
I guess they are, but they're not too rude about it. They don't assume he's an alien.
He's literally reprimanded by the principal.
Simpler answer is these aliens are dumb as hell.
Well, yeah, that's all. We also find out that is extremely true.
Yeah.
And they briefly consider inflicting more head trauma on each other to jog more memories, but decide that might not be a good idea. I could see RL definitely running with that.
That'd be an amazing, like, last half of this book is just them beating each other over the head, recalling things.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be incredibly stupid. And I could tell he probably wanted to do that, like, once. But
they let him have one bang to the head. The sensors were like, a kid could trip and fall, but if they're self-inflicting these hits, that's repeatable behavior. We can't have that.
Yeah, S&P won't have that.
No.
Then RL wastes a page by giving them a completely stupid plan that they don't even execute on.
Right.
But is incredibly flawed, even by their own comments.
Explain it. What's their plan?
They're going to go back to school, break into the school,
right.
Find the files in the school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Remember, they can't read.
Yep.
Maybe these will be different, Kevin. Maybe for some reason these will be in English.
they're going to hope for some reason there'll be files on them in English, that they can learn about themselves on.
But before they can do this, a crazy man who has been chasing them this whole time grabs them and says, "Gotcha."
Yeah, he like fucking kicks down the door and like home invaders their house, and they get into a closet and he's like, "I gotcha," and then he opens the door and he's like, "I'm your dad."
Yeah, I'm sorry I used the threatening term "gotcha" when really what I meant was I'm here to help, and I could have used those words instead.
Hello, I'm your father.
Start with that, Dad.
I have you now trapped forever, is what he.
Yep.
Did not need to know. Yeah.
And he says, "You two are brother and sister." They're like, "Cool."
And he proves that he is their father by calling Jacob Jakey, which is Jacob's nickname. Jacob, that's probably not the most secure thing. It's probably, I don't know if most people would go to Jakey. I would assume that would be the quick shorthand, but I don't know.
If he knew his true magic name, then maybe I'd understand.
Yeah, his deep
How
name.
Did you almost know my name? I'm your father, Jakey. And he shows off his armpit so we know that he's not an right. armpit man.
At this point, did you guys believe that he actually was the father?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I wasn't.
It's not that I trusted him. It's just I trusted RL to not surprise me.
Exactly. I wasn't expecting this to make any sudden twist after this.
I knew how much RL needed this, he just really needed this thing to
go along with it.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, man. And Dad's plan is to send him back to school.
Yeah, Dad's plan's great. It's blend into this culture, which you've already done a terrible job of blending into. I'm sure you guys can handle it for 2 to 3 more days while I break into places and try and do the same useless logic, absence of logic plans. And I love that Jacob is like, "All right," and this is a quote here coming up. He's like, "Can we do it? Can we?" The answer, sadly, is no.
Yeah, they basically immediately fuck up, and it's gym class that sinks them. Mr. Grody, great name for a gym teacher.
Yeah, mm-hmm, fantastic. Mm-hmm.
This book is good. Mr. Grody, the gym teacher, gives Jacob the cube and says he has first Blex and there's Thrules and Harbs and stuff. It's another repeat, but a different sport, it seems, from the one with right. Meaners and other things. So they all figure out that you can't Blex for shit, and the kids start chanting, calling them Earth Geeks.
That's what did it. Out of all these other things, it was just the sport.
They can't play a sport. They're Earth Geeks. And I'm like, okay, yep, that's anxiety. Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm gonna get run out of town for not knowing this like one like social thing.
Mm-hmm. To quote, "Do you know the rules of the game that everyone starts playing at the age of 3?
God damn it.
And I'm like, cool, we're saying some things about conformity. Like, these are arbitrary things. Like, I do think this scene is actually pretty strong, despite having, dumb language and not a single indication of how to play the thing, but that's kind of the point. I don't know. I'm gonna give RL a pass on this one. I think it's an actually pretty good. Pretty
why
good
are they even speaking the same language? I don't understand what's. I don't understand
that's,
how that works.
That's the thing I'm saying is like that's what I don't like about this. Like, oh, alien sport or like there's these small little changes, but this culture is so close and everything. Like, it's just I get that you can't have it be in another language, but it feels like. Just it doesn't feel like he really tried. It just feels like he just came up with a couple of Seussian words that he peppered in throughout, and that's it. And that was the extent of the world building,
But this is the last time it'll feel like he's going anywhere because things just completely disintegrate from here.
Yeah,
they're rushed into the principal's office. He does a simple Earth Geek test on them that they fail, where he asks, like, "Can you name the 7 continents on our planet?" And he's like, yeah, there are 7 continents on the planet. And he goes, 7 is an Earth number. And he goes, fuck, you fucking got me, dude. And then while the principal is busy celebrating and doing the worm, they jump out the window.
They make their escape.
he's just doing the running man as he's like.
He's just so happy.
I finally did it.
He's thinking about how he's going to turn these Earth Geeks in and get his goat reward that he's been working towards.
He's going to get that goat.
What is their what is their understanding of the universe? They're aware of Earth, but have never like made contact with Earth. But like
Dude, don't worry. We're going to get there.
Don't think about it, because like, how do they know about Earth at all is an excellent question.
There is the loosest of plot contrivances holding together the fact that Earth and this planet and other planets are connected in some way. It is absurd. Sure. Okay. It is absurd.
So we meet Dad again, and they're like, Dad, the shit's fucked.
They got us, Dad. Dad, they got us.
We're found out. They got us. We got God. He's like, all right, well, let's steal a car.
And again, we are presented with a car, a vehicle just like a vehicle on Earth, except the wheel is square and there are no pedals. And
no!
it's just a little different, just a little different enough to be annoying to our characters, but not to actually present any idea of what the culture on this world is like.
The steering wheel's on the right side, except for the British adaptions of this book, where it's on the left side.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking crazy, dude. And Dad, in what I'm seeing as a recurring motif in R.L. Stine's work, which makes me wonder about something, Dad immediately gets his kids into a dangerous and life-threatening car crash.
This is I love it when RL books have real life horror in it, and this is true life car accident horror occurs.
There's been a lot of these I've noticed in the last couple of Goosebump books. Right? Like I just feel like the ones we most respond to is at some point the kids are almost killed in a car.
Yeah, and the dad is driving, and I'm like, RL. You're trying to express something here?
Did something happen to you with Papa, Grandpapa LRL and an old Cadillac or something?
Open up to us, man. We're close at this point.
Yeah.
And they wake up in a different principal's office, Mayor Governor Dermar.
The Mayor Governor, yes. He is mentioned earlier. That's an alien term, Mayor Governor, I guess. And they're in a prison. Jacob is a little beat up. Dad has, I believe, a cut on his head. He's got like a bandage on his head, and Arlene broke her arm, which is again playing into the real car accident horror. But then they are shuffled, and the cops come into the prison cell, grab them out, take them to Mayor Governor Damar's office, where he reveals that they know they are Earth geeks and that they want the weapon. He keeps saying, "Dad, give me the weapon."
Yeah, surrender the weapon, and he's like, "We don't know what you're talking about. We don't know no weapon with the oil of." With the oil of Tom Clancy, an interrogation scene takes place.
This scene, again, now we're dealing with fucking torture, because it cuts to it cuts to Jacob hanging upside down in torture media res, where the blood is pulsing in his head. He's being lowered to a vat that is similar to, quote, a vat,
a witch's cauldron.
A witch's cauldron that cannibals would use to cook a person.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
But it's filled with a pulsing liquid that he can't quite make out until he is lowered in to splatters. The splatters are back, baby. They're being used as a torture device now.
And me, in my naivety, I was like, oh, cool. We're reusing a thing. That's
right.
Great.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Like, cool. That actually kind of builds things out. Yeah, they're dunked in the splatters, and they're like, we don't know where the weapon is. We don't know.
And we don't know who we are, is what they should have been saying more and more. Like,
yeah,
they have.
Please help us.
They're not lying. And a splatter rolls onto his tongue once again. In fact, multiple instances of tonguings by the splatterers occur. It is gross. They're going in his mouth. He can't breathe. He's being submerged, but he's hearing a voice inside of his head.
Yeah, and it's the splatter leader, Grolf, reaching out with his mind to be like, be not afraid, just tell them you have the weapon, and leave the rest to us. And he's like, all right, voice in my head, but he doesn't really do anything. His dad just kind of says, all right, we'll tell you where the weapon is.
Right.
Also, don't chew on me, Grolf says.
Right. It's one of those extremely frustrating RL moments where the main character has a chance to act and is robbed of any agency, and the dad, it seems like dad is going along with it, but the dad is not. The dad just decided to lie in that moment to save their lives, and then it turns out that Grolf begins to talk to him, right? They, after they are dropped out,
they're taken out, and the the president, whatever, the mayor, governor is like, hey.
Mayor, governor, get it. Come
mayor,
on.
Mayor, yeah, come on. Let's keep it straight here. Let's fucking goosebuds. All right. Yeah, the mayor, governor. The mayor, governor's like, all right, tell us where the weapon is. And they're like, okay, we will. But first. And then the cauldron tips over and all the splatters come out and they swarm the mayor, governor, and his guards.
Which
they run out of the gymnasium. I just kind of pictured this taking place in the school gym.
It seems like it's taking place in the school, but all I know is the protocol for utilizing these creatures, which obviously they are at war with, we learned about very soon, is really loosey-goosey here, because there were no contingency plans for the fact that the cauldron could just tip.
Yeah, but also they're using them as like a security system.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're using the enemies and their eternal war on this planet as the torture device. And that's what I'm saying. There's just no protocols for containing these things. So the bugs revolt, and they're like, finally, we have found ourselves in a room with the mayor governor. Now we can make our strike and end this war for once and for all. We'll cut off the snake's head. And they do essentially begin the murder process.
And both the guards and the mayor governor, despite knowing that this opposition force exists and using them for their own torture means,
they're completely overwhelmed.
They're completely overwhelmed. They don't know the whistle trick.
They don't know the dude. Oh my God. This was a moment where they don't know the whistle trick. Here's a world building moment. Everybody has a whistle around their neck. Every kid wears a whistle, right?
Cool.
And it's like, what's the fucking whistle for? And they never use it until they save them in that first part. Instead of teaching them how to whistle, they're like, where's your whistle at? You know, have that be an object, an alien object that has some world building, right?
Yeah.
Or don't even make it easy to identify as a whistle. Make it whistle. Make it a,
an object.
You know, like a little gourd or something. You're like, what's that about?
Right, exactly. Some strange object, right?
And that would explain why the splatters would actually need the Earth Geeks. Like, they could be like, get close to them, grab their
whistles.
Remove
their whistles, right. But no, we don't do that.
No. The splatters form a pyramid.
Mm-hmm. With Grolf at the top.
Which is a red flag for me. Mm-hmm. So it shows a hierarchical society.
<Yep. laughs> And also, we should clarify, before we get too deep into this, Grolf lets Jacob know that they are a highly intelligent and sentient species of creature.
Yeah, right. They're like, they don't like us. Because
we look weird.
They don't like us because we look weird, but we're way smarter than them.
Right.
Which I believe at this point, the aliens have not been.
No.
Have been real dumb.
Grolf asks them for the weapon, which is the wristwatch, never before mentioned, but worn on. maybe it was mentioned.
I don't think it was ever mentioned.
It's dad's wristwatch has a bomb in it.
Right.
They're like, give us the wristwatch and we'll send you back home. Or maybe they will. And Jacob takes it and in like, the most complicated,
I don't understand this.
Complicated move, throws the watch away because they're like, the wristwatch is a bomb and we're going to use it to kill the armpit aliens.
It's not even a throw. He smashes it and it says he smashes the crystal, which I don't know what the crystal was. Was that part of the explosive device?
It was the detonator maybe. I don't, but wait, also I wanted you guys to help explain this to me is... The entire reason this book is happening is because of this bomb.
Yes.
Right.
That the splatters reveal that they wanted to fight back against their oppressors that seemed to capture them and use them as defense forces around a school.
Right.
Or torture devices in a cauldron. But also the splatters had the ability to go off planet and kidnap these humans and memory wipe them.
Right, and bring weapons from Earth, I think?
Bring weapons from Earth and plant a bomb on them because they said this will be where our enemies will never look.
Right.
Yeah, in order to turn them into terror mules, I guess.
Yeah. Right.
It's so complicated.
Is the bomb their bomb? Was it an American bomb? I don't know.
Yeah.
They were like, if it was like we infiltrated your MI6 and we took the weapons from your Q, your pen weapons and your watch weapons.
Right. Or like it'd be cool if it was like America's greatest export is murder weapons.
And, damn.
You know, like that's damn. Like that would have been cool if he made some sort of industrial complex reference, you know, like, but no, we don't even get that. It's just, there's loosey goosey rules being made here.
Or if splatters are weak to high pitched noises or whatever, maybe like we needed the orange soda in your backpack.
Right.
Like,
wait, what would the orange soda do? Protect from?
It would be the aliens' high-pitched noise or whatever. It'd be the aliens' weakness.
Okay.
We needed a substance that is common on Earth or something like that.
It's MEAC for trolls and Ernest Scared Stupid. I get it.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. That's a great reference.
Yeah, thank you. A literary reference we all understand. So right now in my mind I'm like, all right, Jacob is like, the cycle of violence can't continue. Mm-hmm. Like, they can't retaliate with like a weapon of mass destruction. You know, I'm going to sacrifice myself for my own principles. And
no more child bomb mules, he says.
Right.
Ed Arlene's principles, which is you shouldn't kill living things.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, that could be an interesting kind of message. It seems a little heady for RL, but could work. And like, we don't really know why he does it. He just says, like, I was inside their minds and I could see that they did not intend to let us live.
He could feel his hate, right? He could feel the hate of Grolf. But instead of, like you said, ending the cycle of violence, he instead decides to commit genocide in that moment and kill thousands of splatters that are highly intelligent.
Yeah,
because the watch also emits a high-pitched sound when it is crushed.
I read that as he just set off the alarm on it. But I don't know why he smashed it first. I'm with you, Kevin. It is very unclear exactly what's happening.
It's got like a car alarm on it. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So the fucking head leader guy,
the mayor governor.
John Mayor Governor shows back up and says
they're walking around the room and this is a quote, the only sound is the crunch of splatter bodies under our shoes, which was, again, let's remind the listener,
these are
highly intelligent creatures.
Yeah. And the mayor governor comes in and he says, you're not going anywhere because you're national heroes. And then they have a big party.
They have a days long party with cake and champagne for some reason.
Yeah, they're fucking drinking.
And the mayor governor's doing the worm. He's been doing the worm for days.
He's been doing the worm for so long. His abs are going out. Like, he can't sustain it.
His abs are spasming so hard that he needs to ingest large quantities of chocolate cake to get sugar and salt into his body to stop the spasms.
He keeps ripping out the IVs he's connected to like, because right. He's doing the worm,
right.
Still.
I have to celebrate more, or yeah. This war was all for naught.
I have to use the spasms for further wormings, is what he says.
His wife is there, and she's like, please stop doing the worm. Please, just stop doing it. Let the
Come
doctors
home,
help
I miss you.
Come home. And he's like, no, I'm married to the worm now. And everyone cries because they, you know, are confronted with the true face of addiction, a president who can't stop doing the worm. And they get drunk and they're like, we really wish you wouldn't call us Earth Geeks. And in between doing the worm, the mayor governor says, oh, on our planet, that's a compliment. What? On our planet, geek is a compliment. Weren't we fugitives from the law?
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
I don't know what exactly... I don't know that this was really well thought out about what was happening here. I think choices were made and followed through with, and that was simply it, which we can applaud that at least he got it done, the job.
On our planet, it's a compliment.
It got to the final chapter. It's an accomplishment. Like, when on the TV, when they announced Earth Geeks are here, that wasn't a look out, some real heroes are here. It was like, find and kill.
Right.
Yes.
They must go.
Earth Geeks must go. Not to a party, but, you know, in general.
What if that had been the twist? Yeah, what it literally was what you said, Kevin. Earth Geeks must go to a fun party we're throwing for them.
What do they think they're saying? Earth badasses must go? Like, it pissed me off.
I'm with you. I don't freaking know. But Jakey is like, all right, we saved your lives. The party's getting a little tiresome. We'd really like to go home. To which the mayor governor lets them know, I'm sorry, bro. We ain't got space travel. You killed all the guys that know how to do space travel.
you killed all of the bugs that knew how to do space travel enough to abduct you and get you here. And they're like, oh, should have thought that one through, Jakey.
But crazy old Phil, who was mentioned in chapter 1, might know how to get you there.
But the alternative to leaving in Crazy Old Phil's rocket is staying and getting surgical mouths armpits.
That's right.
Why would they make you do that?
Man, because you gross them out so much with how you eat food with your mouth.
You must conform. Please conform.
Just throw a blanket over them. Let them eat in peace.
They even talk about how they'll drill them into them. It's not even like a refined surgery. It's a drilling process. No, that's
true. Yeah, and they hold their hand up for a high five, which is not reciprocated.
Nope. I do love that they're having this conversation, to which the soldier walks up and says, "What about Crazy Old Phil?" And I love that they just call this guy Crazy Old Phil.
Yeah,
he's just known as Crazy Old Phil.
He is known by the president, he appears to be a foremost researcher in his field. Like,
I cannot get my grasp around the world of this.
There is none. There's no world.
I know. Yeah.
That's the problem. The problem is there's no world. So they're like, well, you know, if you want to talk to Crazy Old Phil, he's brilliant, but he's crazy. You sure can try.
And they're like, sure, fuck it. Fuck it. Yeah. We'll die for this.
I don't want to watch you do the worm anymore. I'm done. So they go to Crazy Old Phil. I love that before they leave, Demar shrugs after they're like, we'll take our chances on Crazy Old Phil. And this is a quote again. "You are national heroes," he says. "If you want to risk your lives, I cannot say no. But I hope you do not become dead national heroes."
You're the president, dude. You're the mayor, governor. You can't say no to national heroes.
By our laws, you supersede me. You could kill me right now if you want to.
A editor read this book and read the sentence, "But I hope you do not become dead national heroes," and said, "That is good for children. That is okay." Those are good words that are full of meaning and need to be in this book.
Hey, I have some notes about, you can't make the title Earth Geeks Must Die, but we can definitely talk about some.
But this line is book. This line is fine.
So they go to Crazy Old Phil. Crazy Old Phil says, "I'm crazy." And they're like, all right, no need to explain. Crazy Old Phil puts them in the rocket. Rocket ignites. They go into space time. Mm-hmm. In order to arrive before when they left.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Sure. They crash land in a 1950s looking suburb,
right?
Where they see some normal people, and they're like, "Hey, normal people!" And then the normal people are like, "Hey!" And then they remove their human heads to reveal tiny lizard heads piloting the people.
It's a cool ending.
Ruh-roh.
Okay. So, like, instantly, I have a better ending, and I wrote it down as soon as I was done. I was like, "Why did they not land on the splatter-dominated planet and have to, you know, have a comeuppance at least? Like, at least, like, don't make it just be nebulous-ass ending where it's just like, well, more alien stuff. No, fucking make them pay. You know, if you're going to have main characters that have no character traits and no growth whatsoever, at least make them suffer at the end so that you can be like, they are not good people. They deserve to suffer.
This one's not even a bad end as much as just like, oh, well, now we got to get used to these purple-headed hells.
Right.
They did commit genocide.
They deserve to have their comeuppance on Splatter Planet.
I think it would have been a baller move if the rocket just did explode, and then his last thoughts were, "Shouldn't have trusted Crazy Old Phil."
Like, yeah, my
they
life
just roll the dice and lost. Like,
it would have as much bearing and as much weight as the actual ending of the book, probably more.
Yeah,
I guess you can't kill children in space flight either.
No.
God damn it.
So it is a series of things that happened, this book.
And the crazy thing is, like, there were so many moments where it was actually kind of fun. Like, we were talking about, like, the mystery box aspect of it was kind of fun. And I actually liked that because it made it so that he didn't have to do his normal steps of, like, normal children life and fake outs of, like, you know, oh, it seems like it's a horror, but it's not, and which he had a couple of in this, but far less. There were actual horrors. There were actual weird things occurring because it was outside of our normal existence. It was fun, but it just didn't feel like...
Towards the end, he just kind of shits it out. He's just like, yeah, here's a bunch of stuff that doesn't make sense with any of the other things I did. I like that, you know, again, there is an action, a kindness that takes place that they're rewarded for. Mm-hmm. But making the bugs, like, warmongers or whatever, just, like... It kind of removes any connection I have with the universe. I was like, is this going to be a book where kindness ends up being the thing that saves humanity? Of course not.
No, I think it seems to lose completely off the tracks around the point of, you're saying as soon as the bugs are warmongers, I'd say the point where like, but then I realized the bugs were also going to betray us. So I just kind of make this whole thing.
Yeah.
Not matter, and I destroyed the bomb. You're like, so what are we even doing here?
Like, it just, he should have worked the bugs. They should have destroyed, they should have reverse genocided this planet and then lived as
yeah,
God.
A different genocide is what I'm asking for.
I'm just asking for a kinder genocide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like a good like post-punk song.
A kinder genocide.
Well...
Yeah, I this one is no. I'm not into this one, actually. I'm over it.
Yeah, some good imagery, but ultimately
had promise, did not pay off on the promise.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I'm ready to get the fuck out of Goosebumps 2000. Like we got one more. We have Ghost in the Mirror.
That sounds scary. Mirror ghosts are very scary. I'm hoping that this one will hit and be one of the good of the Goosebumps series 2000. It seems like it's been about every other, so hopefully we're due.
I'm weirdly looking forward to this last one. I think maybe he'll end it. He'll stick the landing.
Yeah, let's see. Let's see if he can.
I think that's been a bit of Goosebuds. Guys, thanks for Kevin, especially. Thank you for recapping so well.
Hey, no problem.
You guys got, like, you know, any podcast business you guys want to talk about? Any cool stuff you want to share?
Well, I think people should, if they feel like it, they should support the show on patreon.com/goosebuds.
That'd be fantastic.
Because little known fact, you can receive extra episodes. Sorry, it's really hot. You can get extra episodes of Camp Goosebuds by supporting us. It's a whole other podcast where we just hang out and banter. I think folks would like it if only they knew.
If only they could experience it to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, you get certain levels. You get your name in the book of names. The end of this episode, which you'll hear right after this,
which is a fun way to playfully have a good time with us sometimes.
Sometimes. Sometimes.
Sometimes.
That's patreon.com/goosebuds. And of course, also in the summer, if you're like, I need some new clothes to put on my skeleton, you can go to goosebuds.store, take a look at our Etsy store, some fun little. What am I doing? I'm undermining our
clothes are fun.
Shirts.
Clothes are fun. You can buy them in small. So that does make
that's
them
true.
Little. So
thank you. Thank you for saving that. Yeah, you can go to goosebuds.store and check out some Goosebuds merch.
Yeah, get some big fun Goosebuds merch.
You're going to do the worm all day in these clothes.
Get a giant ass extra, 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 extra large Goosebud shirt and pretend you're a child again.
Hide your pit mouths, your armpit mouths within a large, extra, extra large shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your shameful armpit mouths. Also, Kevin, you got a new game?
I have a new podcast.
What?
So back in 2020, I recorded a podcast once a month called Heart Cannon, and I did it for my Patreon, and I talked to a bunch of my friends about art that they liked that they felt was like kind of prickly or weird or that just not that many people knew about. So it was like a little interview show I did. And I did that once a month for a whole year, and I never released it. And now it's 2023, and I'm like, I should probably release it. So every Wednesday for the next couple of months, there's going to be a new old episode of Heart Cannon going out into the ether. I don't have a link for you yet because it's literally not up yet. But yeah, check out Heart Cannon on your podcast catcher of choice.
Now, I should clarify, because I noticed a lot of people misspelling or using different versions of
the
word
canon.
Oh, yes.
This is the literary canon, C-A-N-O-N, canon.
Just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure. Seen a lot of Spider-Verse memes where everyone's spelling it with two N's, and that's not what it means, guys. That's a different thing.
You're doing unnecessary work. You're hitting an extra button that you don't have.
Yeah. You're hitting an extra key. It's one N.
Save those calories for spider stuff. And the first episode of the first two episodes of Hard Canon feature Paul.
Yeah, I'm there.
Oh, I'm on those later episodes, right?
So you're in the I have your episode. I just never got the time to edit it. So you're the first episode of season two, which has not launched to anyone yet.
Okay.
But it will eventually. It's just
I would love to remember what I said on it.
Yeah, we talked about Weird Al's UHF, which was
Hell yeah,
that's right. Yeah. And Paul, yours were your first episodes, Better to Tease. What did you guys talk about on that
I
one?
Did Stand By Me as my first one, and then we did Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah.
They were a good time. We talked about Psychic Distance a lot.
Yeah.
Hard cannon with one N.
Hard cannon with one N. That's my thing this week.
Well, two N's actually, but just, you know what you mean.
What? Oh, well, yeah.
Well, wait, C-A-N-O-N. That second. I'm fucking this up.
It's hard cannon with one N.
It's, you know, it's a difficult word.
You know, it's a difficult time to be alive.
It is.
We should put it in the 3N cannon and shoot it into space.
Yeah. You know, and also watch Continue Show while we're in orbit.
Yeah, go watch some Continue Show. Have a good time.
Watch a Continue Show. Oh, hey, if you're listening to this in the next couple days, I don't know how fast we're going to get this edited, but got a couple more days to watch Star Trek Prodigy before Paramount Plus pulls it forever. So
watch it.
A show I wrote on and produced, I'm very proud of, and it's getting pulled for tax cuts. Woo! You can buy that watching on Paramount Plus, but you know what? You could just also Google Star Trek Prodigy free or like torrent and find ways to watch
There's nothing illegal about typing something into a search bar.
As Kevin always says, yeah. I think that's a valid way to do it because it'll be virtually unable to get for paid money.
This would be a good time to start seeding, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And by seeding, that is an alien term that has no meaning on Earth. So I'm not legally culpable for having said it.
Good cover.
Thank you.
Beep, boop, boop. Steal.
You want to go out back and throw a blorf around?
Oh, yeah. Let's bleef it up.
Lost one there is a rotten bloop.
All right. Let's go do a couple schwangers.
All right. Glorf you later, everybody.
Love you. Bye.
Goosebuds is made possible by the support of our wonderful Patreon supporters, and we absolutely must read from the Book of Names.
Book of Names.
First, we have Steffen, Jive, Turkey, Kuwabara,
Hollis, Hornbeak,
Low Belly, Hate Me,
Cameron, Murphy, Audio,
Michael McDowell,
Hey Josh Rob,
Mickey C,
Nathan Dolezal,
Mike Lanteri.
I just real quick want to say, I feel like reading the tops of these is like Sirius should be playing and the Chicago Bulls announcers should be reading these names, because I feel like we're in like a list of names that I've heard for my entire life. Buddy Morrill.
Ilkade.
Mel Dipson.
Afshin.
Brian Wells.
Dango Twists.
Zentacles.
Stealth Bates.
Robert Moon.
Jason Crooker.
Clay Castle.
Miguel Pardo.
John Keaty.
Gaff.
Justice for Paranoia Shop content. You'll never get any.
The Juggalobalist.
Gregory D. Warren.
Alan Saylor.
Cody Redfield.
Bradford Coulter.
Aiden pledges their hammer to Dwarf Daddy Kevin.
Thank you, Dwarven Child.
Jar Jar Slinks.
Chosen One pledges his cadre of musketeers to House Kevin.
God,
thank you, musketeer children.
Levi Than.
Up and Champ.
I did that joke last month, and it's still funny to me, so it's just going to keep happening.
It stays in.
Jonas Eggman.
Carl.
Anthony Mulberry.
The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation children.
Elusive Koala.
Yanni Markovina.
Brooke X.
Jesus Christ.
Christian Vanskeever.
Drew Applegate.
Jeremy Lowe.
Brian Hobgood.
Zach Connor.
Patreon _ donator comma yo.
Joe. Spooky Digital Ghost. Tierney.
Tom Whittem.
Andrew Jadsack will gladly take those spiked lawn aeration sandals if Chad has no use for them. I know what they do now, and I'm using them all the time.
Whoa.
His sod is so well aerated.
I'm stomping all over my sod.
Lord Cornwallis will do that as well.
Carson Birkenbean knows what we're talking about.
Murph EP.
Alicia Grafe.
Devin Ticklebean, the Chadswarm.
The Chadswarm.
Oh, hello. Sean Minogue.
Rushy Glenn.
Wiggle It.
Luke LaFountain.
Chip Handsome.
Matt McClellan.
John Barber.
Sarah Kemp.
Tanya Turtle.
Jonas Blotterman.
Juan Jalapena.
Stick that down with some Keith Halcrow.
Timothy Misidlakis.
Form it into a nice little statue with some Clay McCarty.
Park it right there with Parker Lee.
I don't have anything. Paul Grasso. I love you, Paul Grasso.
Aerate your sod with Paul Grasso.
Paul Grasso.
Ride me out onto the middle of the lake. I want to have a lake picnic with Ham underscore boat.
Let's not get too crazy with Joe regular name Scott.
Hey, everybody loves Raymond Hernandez.
I had to clear my throat. I'm a little flimmily.
Proud to say, the crowd friends, but prideful. Happy Pride. You're getting the hard Chad. You're getting the hard ones.
I'm going to take a seat with my Matthew Sutton.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I am over the Alex Moon, the robotic dog, over that last one.
Wow. Sorry, Jeffrey Owen Kahi.
Nice.
Just a dash of Kelsey Kinnaman, please.
Ooh.
Oh, I broke my arm. I'm going to need a Russell Casberg.
Hope everyone else likes this. I hope people enjoy this.
Professor Xavier?
Nice. That's where I went. That's where I went too, man. Oh my God, good luck.
Wait, let me go to my favorite steakhouse, Ruth Chris Putricus.
You know who else great? A basketball great, Scottie Pippen. That was easy.
I'm going to have a big old bowl of Luke noodles.
Pour me one too in a giant Hugh Boland.
I got to clean up some ice. It's all something been skating on. I'm going to get the Zambambino out.
I got to protect my spirit organ that's in my butthole from the dungeon kappa.
What is happening? Grand Moff Hamster has located the plaque base on Planet Tooth.
I don't see Zach where this name is.
Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry. We could stop.
No, this is hard. This is good. This is going to get the juices flowing, going to get the energy up. We don't want to be limp ducks out, right?
Hark! Is that Tobias Clark?
Hey, you rhymed one.
Hell yeah. Don't get too loverly, meet Virginia.
What?
You know, I already mixed Nathan once, but I think it's time for a Nathan remix.
Hey, you remember that bowl you poured me, Kevin? I needed a little more kimchi.
Yeah.
Guys, my toe's been killing me because I Reed Steubendyked it.
you know who I saw the other day in a large, pants-shaped castle? It was Estimeno, Lord of Paul's Pants.
You know, I was down in Australia and I saw a whole pack of wild Joey Evans.
Hold on to your pants because Chris Paranormal Pajama Priapism Nelson is here to fling them off. We're killing ourselves.
Kevin, this is going to be a 30-minute edit.
Yeah, you know what? We'll do this at a different point at another name reading. But we'll go back to speed for the moment. Carewise Gamgee. And I'm serious because I'm giving up the Lord of the Rings reference.
Let it be known that Kevin tapped out all of you who pledged to him.
Yeah.
Swaggy Yellow Squire has the moves. If you want them, come back to the old factory on Main Street with $10,000 cash. No cops.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, that's cool. Cameron Hansen.
Kieran McNamara.
Diet Soda.
Jackie Ledoux.
Coleman Laguza. We did a good volley for a while, guys. Just want to say.
Yeah. I was down to keep going. Lamb!
He's really going. You're really trying to get those people to pledge to you. You know, it feels generally depressing that you're really reaching out to them so hard.
No, we said we were done. We said we were done. The deadly bulb with nothing fun at it.
A pair of Scots.
Ben Bohod.
Matt, the half-court warlock, bachelor.
Levi Kidder.
David Gray.
Bryce Dieri.
Matthew Brittato.
Cuxan callback.
Cuxan.
Cuxan callback.
Carbson.
I am Cornholio. I need TP for my bunghole.
Jonas Enivoldsen.
Calamity Carl.
Boney.
Germ Juice.
Some of Chad's bird friends, we pledge our talons and sharpened beaks to Chad.
Squaw.
They don't need sharpening. They're so painful already.
No, they do have to. They need some calcium. And
all
stuff
right.
To
okay.
Keep them going.
He's right.
Nicholas Maloney.
Nick Johnson.
Burger's Wonderful World.
Stephen Day.
Eric Horwitz.
Tiffany Lee.
Dr. Egg Drop Soup Man.
Thomas Jansis.
Lucretia McEvil.
Mutant Astronaut.
Ryan Carroll.
Jeremy Bowser.
Henry Torbert.
Adam Knapp.
Ninja Breadman.
Megan McCormick Mason.
Peanutberg, level 69.
Helodicus Frenchlin.
Aaron Lord.
Logan Derby.
Brad Schmelzer.
Dr. Chocula pledges every claw and fang under his command to Paul.
That's at least 12.
Doing the math. Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, check.
Slush!
Callum Mr. Misfire West.
Mandy Nasty.
Skeletorin.
Robotarena. I just realized what it actually is.
Robotarena.
Robotarena. Yoplin.
Philip Reynolds.
SSJ Trogdor.
Chicago Frank returns.
Nate BitG.
Mr. Unimportant pledges this cool rock he found to whoever last trimmed their beard.
Not me.
I did it last week.
Don't got one.
I guess I get that cool rock.
Ryan R. Davis.
Scott Wable.
Rocco.
Josh Howell pledges his zealotry to whomever needs it most. Everyone.
Zealotry for all.
See, I feel like I should take it all. That makes me more zealous. Evan Bowen.
Mike Spaghetti Jones.
Greg Mustow.
Chris.
Sean Astin masters the Gundam Death Scythe Hell Amber by 311 AMV.
Yeah, second coolest Gundam in Gundam Wing. Hi, first time, long time.
Allie Rose.
Sprinkle Buns.
Soggy Newspapers.
Chris Kulik.
Dakota Kemp.
John W.
Hilda B.
Saturn Video.
Liam Rogers.
Kiwio Flurb.
Serial Killer X.
Wade Norcross.
Ollie Sutz.
Kate the Great.
Mike Hart.
Cassandra Harris.
Gulliver.
Kit Bush. I love your music.
Benjamin Luther.
Cyrusin.
Dennis Wright.
Jover the Moon.
Edgars Crassus.
Cameron Ganseveld.
That last name was my favorite.
Soap.
Big Nick Lane.
Kira and Brian are big fans.
The Office of the Goblin Grader.
Blake Bad Time Havin' Cavin.
Matt Scepter.
Greg Gervasi, a.k.a. Vitizen.
Dan Antonio!
Philip OG Quicksand Truther and Blade Pledger Hamill.
Kevin Cole to pay the toll for eating booty hole tonight at 11.
Just want to clarify, that's whole W-H-O-L-E. He eats the whole butt.
I ate the whole butt. I can't believe I ate the whole butt.
Hey, once you pop.
Anthony Rodriguez.
B.
Jeff Webb is still a big baby, but we both sincerely appreciate your well wishes.
Alpaca acquaintance DDS.
S.
Farah Ernie.
CM Crystal Maiden.
Turaku, the thing that goes dunk in the anime. Dunk, dunk.
Jesse.
Chris Curdo.
Cole Gleason.
Spencer Y.
Tan your hide.
Jesse Boggs.
Michael Malloy.
James Stavernos.
Bjarndeer.
Kyle O'Neill.
Chris, the official Goosebuds Chronicler and Ledgerman Byers.
Robert Holden.
Grab Comics.
Adam Brundle.
Jonathan McKinnich.
Anthony Stoker.
Doglips Kajoyan.
Gunnar Toland.
Brony Danza.
Mecha Obama.
Max.
Zindane.
Wonder Skin. Feels just like real skin.
Now on Paul Sentient My Buddy Doll.
Oh God. Oh Lord. God.
Horrific.
AKA Cyberbully.
Blarbin pledges his insect glaive to Kevin.
Thank you, my insect glaive children.
That's Neo, right? That has the insect glaive? Or is that a Monster Hunter?
Monster Hunter, but Neo Monster probably Hunter. Too.
Yeah, Neo can have anything. He just has to say insect glaives and then a bunch. Just
no, N-I-O-H, in. Not Matrix Neo.
Oh.
No, we're saying the same thing.
Okay.
Brandon Nichols can do that too.
Angelo Edward Longton Santone pledges the Holy Blade of Justice.
Try to Paul. And come against the Holy Blade of Justice. I don't care what your houses have.
Christian God is real and has chosen Paul?
Melodies.
Talleen Jones.
Bacon?
Logan Kilgus.
Bosferatu.
Starship 9.
Funny.
Caleb Snyder, Grandmaster of Spells and Enchantments, pledges his wizard, staff, and ancient tome to Paul.
Goddamn. Whoa. Christian God and wizard God have both chosen Paul.
Pagan God and Christian God are on my side.
For once, they agree. Proper spaceman?
Lumo Nuva.
Brian Udath.
A tall glass of dumb bitch juice.
Drink it up.
Look, 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 look. Boppy of the Eastwood, Unlockener of Worlds. Ooh.
3 a.m. sleep.
I love this name. I don't think I've read it before. Nowhere Lucas.
Brian Storrow.
And now we welcome to the Book of Names. Book of officially names. Unofficial Ducks in Public.
J.W.Z.B.
What's going on with these initials y'all doing?
Colin Regan.
Jessica Nicol is the last name in the book for this month.
Welcome to the Book of Names. Get to know your name neighbors because you'll be hearing them forever.
Did we riff too much in this names? Not enough? Let us know.
Let us know. Talk to us via your names or on the Patreon. We love you.
We love you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Love you. Goodbye.
Have you ever killed a houseplant before? Don't worry, you are not alone. But what if I told you you're not destined to be a plant killer? What if I told you you could not only fill your home with gorgeous, luscious, happy, thriving plants, but live a happier life through caring for them? Hey, new plant friend, my name is Maria. I am a former plant killer turned happy plant lady and host of the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where it is my life's mission to help you grow happy plants and thrive alongside them. Because when you learn to care for plants, you really learn to slow down, connect with nature, and nurture yourself too. Each week, I share expert tips, inspiring conversations, and soulful planty wisdom to help you grow a greener, happier life. So if you're ready to turn your plant struggles into plant joy and get the green thumb you've always dreamed of, search Growing Joy with Plants wherever you listen to podcasts and hit subscribe. That's Growing Joy with Plants podcast. Let's grow some joy together.